up? It's your girl Chelsea Sincere of Invisible Podcast Radio.
Hey, you guys, it's your girl Nino Blanco, and I'm here with Chelsea today.
Yes, and next to us, we got our guests, Brianna Gatlin and Johnny Jones. If anything, y'all, this is a second episode of season two, and I know we're about to talk about some dope conversation in relation to our theme for September, which is the ownership of self-worth. So let's get right into it. How are you guys today?
I'm good. I'm excited.
Yeah. Doing good.
All right.
So Johnny is a good friend of mine. He's hilarious. But I want to talk about his production company. So he has a production company called Lingo Chicago, which was founded in 2015 when a small group of people gathered in his North Lawndale apartment to enjoy a private concert. 22 events later, it was apparent that he enjoyed bringing people together and creating tailored social experiences for artists and entrepreneurs within his community. Lingo Chicago was birthed from his passion and has set out to serve a catalyst of empowering creatives to express their art and talent. The idea behind the Lingo Chicago stemmed from growing up in an impoverished neighborhood like North Lawndale that lacked resources and opportunities for people to creatively express themselves through art and music. Lingo Chicago has set out on new horizons to host and manage events for aspiring artists and provide DJ services from many generations to come. I want to start with you, Johnny. I want to know how you kind of started with the Lingo Chicago. And I know I talked about it a little bit within your bio, but, you know, talking amongst yourself, you personally, like, what made you, you know, think that this would be something to start with in the North Lawndale community?
Well, I'll try to make it short as possible, but growing up in North Lawndale, I just never really had the choice or option to experience some form of, like, nightlife, you know. You always had to just kind of leave the neighborhood, you know, and I always believed in, you know, wanting to at least have a choice on whether I wanted to stay in my neighborhood to do something, you know, or leave it, you know. And so when I went off to school in Canton, Ohio, small town Canton, Ohio, yeah, don't even ask me, but it was very white, and at the same time, I bought, like, the Chicago, and, like, with me when I went to Canton, Ohio, and we got a house off campus, and we started throwing all these parties, and I was, like, curating them, and, like, I think my freshman year, I knew that it was something that I was supposed to do, one, because Canton was just really lacking, you know, diversity, and so once I came back home, I started DJing, and then I just saw how it was able to bring all these different cultures and backgrounds together, and I was like, man, how can I make this bigger than me? You know, there's a lot of different lingos at every event, you know, I go to, or I DJ at, and so hence, Lingo Chicago.
One more time on the introduction of Ms. Gatlin. So she has experience specifically in media counseling, creating media kits and bios, event coordinating, along with a sponsorship and vast history of proposal and contract writing. Brianna has over 6 years of grant writing experience in the nonprofit sector and also participates as an instructor in After School Matters organization for teens. She recently started Swing PR in Chicago and has worked with over, I would say within the past 5 years, with notable clients including Good Music, Artist GLC, Mike Terror, Mitzi Media, 81. Wow, yo, if anything, I'm gonna just say Lupe Fiasco Foundation, King Louis, Chrisette Michelle, Sway of MTV, y'all, New Era, Complex, Mos Def, the list goes on. And so with that being said, Brianna, if you can just give us background of how Swank Publishing developed into a multimedia PR brand and what gave you the go to pursue your brand at full force.
Okay, so my bio is hella long, y'all.
Yeah.
I've been in the industry. I literally transitioned from being a journalist to having a PR company. So I'm just now actually finally starting to revamp what I do. Because everybody's more interested in what I do now versus what I used to do. But obviously, all of that plays a part. Mm-hmm. So Swank came out of me being a journalist. But I went from being a journalist to being an editorial director of a teen magazine here in Chicago called Teen Star, which is still
existing. Yeah, yeah.
And I'm one of the founding members, even though they didn't put my name on the paper.
It's okay. We're going to say it one more time on air.
But fast forward, Swank came out of True Star.
Okay.
And at the time, Swank was initially supposed to be a a customized publishing company. So that's why Swank Publishing is what the original name of Swank PR is.
Gotcha.
Because we did the Scream Tour, like we did two of the Scream Tour tour magazines when it was huge, like Marianne was on the cover, when Sierra was on there. So me and my business partner at the time created that. Well, she decided that she didn't want to be a business partner anymore. And so I knew everybody and I had the clientele, and our first client was GLC. And so we switched over because I knew so much about media and journalism already. It wasn't difficult for me to transition because all of my friends were writers already. I was already a writer at one time. I understood how media worked. I understand how pitching works because I did it as a writer. And so going from pitching as a journalist versus pitching as a publicist was pretty much a very easy transition. So now I'm actually, Swank is actually going into its 11th year.
Nice.
So
congrats.
We've worked with a lot of people even just from then on. Really, my first big event, I would say, that kind of put Swank in like the spotlight of the city was really when I did the event with LeBron James. And there was a lot of media from that, and the crazy part is it was just a party. Not to say it was just a party, but it was a party that LeBron and Jay-Z showed up to.
Right.
Derrick Rose was there. So it was like after that, I started working with the interns. After that, there was just this whole immense amount of just different talent and people that reached out to me. I've worked since then with Lil Rel. Lil Rel, I went to school with him.
Really?
Grammar school and high school with him.
Look at that.
So I'm a little older than I look, but I've been in the industry really since I was like 18 years old. And so there was a lot, and my background just was journalism from the jump. Even when I was in high school, I wrote for the New School newspaper. And then after that, so it was honestly a very great evolution to where I am now versus when I started. Got to study journalism at Oxford University as well. So there was this well-rounded part of me that just eventually evolved into PR. And I knew I wanted to get in PR once I realized, one, I was already doing it and didn't realize I was doing it. And then I was like, wow, I know a lot of people all over the country. Why don't I just take this, instead of me trying to focus specifically on Chicago, I can do PR for anybody.
Absolutely.
And that's how I thought about it. So that's kind of how Swank started.
Okay.
It came out of a situation where I really took a situation that was really negative.
So I guess with Johnny and Brianna, speaking to both of you guys, whomever want to come in first, I would say looking into the direction which your career has taken you and seeing the progress, you know, of your businesses, how would you say today's culture, if anything, impacts more so of how you execute? Like, in what way do you see your services, your business impacting the communities in which you guys are in?
Thank you for that question. Yeah. So for me, I've done a lot of nonprofit work, working with young adults. I even still doing it now. Shout out to Safe Families Plus. I told y'all I would do that for y'all. but basically, in North Lawndale, I think ultimately, I've always looked at it in a sense of knowing that young men and women, you know, look up to people like myself and other people who are doing great things, and it encourages them to like know that somebody from my hood is doing something positive with their life, you know. And so for me, I know it's something that our neighborhood needs because we don't have it. It's non-existent. We have all of the other amenities, like, you know, that is necessary for a neighborhood, but like nothing that relates to our youth today, you know. And everybody always wants to know why there's so much, you know, gun violence and gang related things going on, because they have nothing else to do specifically in our neighborhood, you know what I mean? So I know that bringing something like the Lingo Chicago on a consistent basis to North Lawndale has always been a passion of mine, because that's where it started for me. And so, yeah, I know it will play a huge role Yeah, yeah. I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, it does. Appreciate it.
So I grew up in a family where my mom was always very active in the community. So she was like always like doing, you know, like the, you know, how they had a block parties and stuff like that. But my mom also sat on the LSC at the schools. So like I naturally just always was active in doing something in the community. So, but for me, my perspective was a little bit different because I was so in the music industry and so interested in that, I decided to just go the nonprofit route and join different boards and things like that. Also, my background was in nonprofits and being a grant writer. So my background came, that was my first 9-to-5 was at a nonprofit. I worked at a nonprofit probably for maybe 5 or 6 years before I went full time into Swank. And then even after the in between, I taught students at Marshall, Michelle Clark, in Tilton, Tilden, South Shore. Wow. You know, so like I've always had some type of connection to the community. And I guess I'll just piggyback off of what Johnny's saying is, at the end of the day, like part of, I think we wouldn't be able to, one, be who we are and do what we do if we did not reach out and really, you know, show the youth and the young people exactly what it means to be passionate about what you do, how important it is also to just be yourself. And if you have these amazing ideas and these things that you want to do, that you can do. So for me, it's always just been a second nature thing. It's never been like, oh, I have to do this. If I'm passionate about it and it's something that, you know, just moves me, I'm gonna just do it. Yeah. So for me, it's always been, you know, if it's sitting on boards for nonprofits or, you know, teaching kids or going to speak on panels and things like that. So those are some of the things that I do. A lot of times I've been back to my neighborhood because my mom still lives over there, but people think I live in a whole other city. And I'm like, no, I just live a little bit closer downtown than you. And yeah, I've gotten out the neighborhood, you know. But I think the most important thing is when people see that you look like them and you're making strides as far as your career and college and doing all these things, I think they can identify with it more when they see somebody that looks like them.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's something about, I'd say, seeing that, one, I'm not the only one that can go, you know, and pursue, if anything, pursuing what I want to do and not allowing, like, my situation or my surroundings more so affect me in a way that, you know, could prevent my growth. So,
yeah. So I wanted to kind of transition from, like, just talking about in general, like, each business, both the businesses you guys have, to our theme that we have for September, which is the ownership of self-worth. But I want to ask both you guys, whoever can go first, can you guys tell us how do you apply your self-worth and identity in executing strategies and products you develop for your consumers?
I can answer that first. So, well, because there's a lot I could say, and I'm only saying this because of what market I'm in. So I will say this. When I started doing PR, nobody in Chicago really understood what PR was.
Yeah.
As far as on the hip-hop rap scene. Industry, older folks, they understand. But there was no person who said, hey, I'm providing PR services to your business or to your craft or to your art. That did not exist when I started.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to get into the self-worth part. So there was a time where I had to really, really, like, prove myself as far as what the value of what I was bringing to the table to different clients. Because, one, Chicago is just a very hard market in general.
Yeah.
People do not care how fabulous you are. They will be like, well, you're okay.
Right.
You know? And so dealing with the mentality here, number one, breaking through that, number one, being a female, number
right.
two, yes. and being black.
Right.
It all played a part in the self-worth of, you know, how I had to build my self-worth.
Mm.
Because I had to work almost 10 times harder than anybody.
Right.
And I still do.
Mm-hmm.
Because now you got white boys coming in here and they can say they've been doing this for 2 years and a black artist will hire them before they are hire a person like Johnny or myself.
Right.
Just because they trust them more.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a crazy mentality in itself. So for me, I had to learn, you know, where there were times where I would price my services and people would be like, oh, that's too much.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on where I was in my life as an entrepreneur,
mm-hmm.
I had to either take that money or I had to not take it. And eventually I got to a point where I was like, I'm not taking your money, fam, because you are a headache and your music sucks.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a time where I had to make a decision and say, okay, well, man, this guy is paying me. He wants to pay me more than everybody else is paying me, but my job is going to be way more difficult. I'm going to have to put in way more work because he's not that good, or he's in his beginning stages. Or so what I started looking at was the amount of work and the level of work I would have to do with the clients. So when I sit down with any client, even now, I need to make sure that I can even sell you as an artist or as a talent.
Mm-hmm.
If I can't, then this is not going to work.
Yeah.
And no matter what I do, it's easy as a person in the service industry, when someone's paying you to do something,
mm-hmm.
it's easy for them to blame the person and say, oh, well, you didn't do your job.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so, again, this all plays into your self-worth. So when you get that, you want to make sure that when you're bringing anybody on and when you're working with anybody, that you feel like it's worth it and that it's worth the headache.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you want to make sure that work that you're putting in is valued properly and appreciated, because there are people that will come and they'll pay you what you're worth, but they won't appreciate
mm-hmm.
the work and the hard work that you do. So there's times where I can sit and send 100 to 200 pitches out for a client and they may not get a lot of, you know, traction.
Right.
But again, if I walk in the door and I say, well, you're a new artist, nobody knows you.
Right.
Then these are things that you need to understand walking in the door. So what I've had to learn is I have to definitely put my value and my worth up first before and have them let them understand who they're working with.
And that's a good point, because as a photographer, I know I'm in the boat of right now, like, just simple, like a little bit more lower level than what you're talking about, but like I'm trying to figure out just the pricing aspect of
mm-hmm.
how to price people.
Mm-hmm.
And even in that, knowing that my work is so good that people are like, well, you paint, like, you want $400? That's a lot of money. And it's like, am I looking at my photo? Then you'll start looking at yourself like,
right.
my
phone. You start double guessing yourself.
Double guessing
yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's deep too, even for me, because Nino's a witness. I have so many hats, you know, as a creative, as a founder of a podcast and a production here,
yeah.
right? On top of having my own photography business. So I'm in the process of not only trying to build money for a production, but still make money to thrive and eat, right? On top of even still having a part-time job,
yeah.
right? So it's like you're feeding so much of yourself to other people while yet still trying to gain for yourself.
Yep.
But in the midst of everything, finding that medium of what is myself.
It takes time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It takes a lot of time.
I'm glad you said that, because I feel like it takes that time.
Yeah. It takes time,
right.
but keep in mind, I will tell you this, and I'm happy to have been one of the first people that have had to deal with it, because it should be easier on you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it's hard, it's easier than
yeah.
it was.
Before.
Just because it's a bigger, Chicago has a spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
I had to do this post Chief Keef and Chance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
That's tough.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
just to give
yeah.
you an idea,
yeah.
which means the people like the Kanye's, the Commons and the Twists, they didn't patronize anybody here. They would all go to New York
right.
or go to
yeah.
LA. So imagine that fight.
Yeah.
So it's great now, and you guys will be fine. In the next year, you'll be good.
Mm-hmm.
It took years for a person to, like me, to one, be able to, because I had to sell what the value of PR was here, because there are people, there was about 85% of the quote unquote artists here didn't know what a publicist was.
Right.
And so they knew I wrote for The Source, they knew all of that, but then when I transitioned and I switched it up, they didn't understand the value of a publicist until they started seeing all these different looks, and even still, they didn't understand the cost. So I'll give you a quick example. A publicist in New York, you know how much a publicist in New York makes off of one client? They make between $3,000 to $5,000 a month off of one client for a retainer.
A month.
I can't charge that here. Mm-hmm. Right now.
Oh, no, you can't.
Oh, no.
But then I'll get clients out of state that'll be like, oh, well, this is my budget. And I always perk up like, oh.
Right.
Here?
Yeah.
If I tell them, you gotta pay me $1,500 a month. Oh my God, why? That's so much. Actually, it's not.
No, right.
And I tell them, go do your research and find out how much a publicist really costs. Mm. And then they'll try to squeeze everything out of me. Mm-hmm. At everything. It's stuff that I ain't even supposed to be doing. And so it makes you really understand the market that we're in.
Yeah.
So that's what we're dealing with here.
Yeah, Johnny, you looking like, whoa, I got a lot.
Yeah, no, that's I appreciate you, Bree, because it's really cool to, you know, just hear you talk about the longevity that comes with it, you know, and as far as, you know, putting in that work on a consistent basis and getting to where you are now. I think it's really interesting, and I'll just use the example of just DJing. So when I first started DJing, I used to follow this chart, and it basically was like, you know, beginner, intermediate, you know, advanced, you know, like, you know, whatever, like the highest level. And so I've been DJing for like almost 5 years now. And so each year, the very first year, I was like, okay, I'm gonna like do this beginner and like charge people these rates, you know. And so like each year passed, I was at like the best. I haven't put myself at the top level yet because I don't use vinyl and I use a controller. And so I think that would be like cheating to people. But anyway, so last summer I was at a point where I was charging like, you know, $500 to $1,000 each event, depending on what it was, especially for like weddings. And so people used to like really get like upset when I used to charge them a certain amount, especially if it was for like a wedding or if they had. So I used to give discounts to people that I like knew, because I mean, I know you, you know, and so like I'm not trying to get rich off of you, you know, but if I don't know you, like why should I give you a discount, you know? And so like they would hear how much I charged the person before, and their referral was like, you know. So I think it's really interesting to think about like just knowing where you started and where you are now, mm-hmm. and like not diverting from that, you know. And so like this year alone I've had to turn down several gigs because people didn't want to pay me what I like gave them a quote for, mm-hmm. and so I had to be okay with that, like, you know. And it's just like, I mean, it sucks I lost that money, but like at this I don't want to lose my integrity, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like I've done a phase of like charging people this certain amount for like a whole summer. One summer I did like $500 the whole summer, you know what I mean? And so, and I like would establish or like, you know, let people know that, you know, after this summer there's no more discounts, you know what I mean? And people still would try to get these discounts, but I think ultimately once you just really have that confidence in yourself and understand, you know, where you are in your craft, don't go back, you know. There's no need to go back, like, because you put in the work to get where you are. So
So I want to also ask you guys another quick question. So why do you believe taking ownership of self-worth is imperative as a creative and entrepreneur?
Well, at some point, like, it gets back down to the time and the energy and the blood, sweat, and tears that you put in.
Mm-hmm.
It's imperative that you get your money.
Right.
It's important that you get what you're worth, because once the other thing is, and this is going back to real versus watered down, the only way that people will understand the value of what you do is if they actually see the work.
Mm-hmm.
Once that work is shown, it shouldn't be any question.
Right.
Creatively, you can, you know, there's people that you're gonna invest in, but once you start investing in yourself and in your business, all that has to at some point break even and turn into go from red to black.
Mm-hmm.
So if it doesn't go from red to black, then you're cheating yourself as an entrepreneur, period. At some point, like he said, there has to be some level of progression. Whether it's creatively you're progressing, but as you creatively progress, then your money should progress, your capital should progress, your business should progress. And the thing is your network should also progress. And all of those things carry some level of worth that is almost irreplaceable. I would say your networking and your creativity will take you to that next level. But even evolving plays a part. You can't stop learning. You have to consistently stay on the cutting edge of even what's happening, because I can be of value today, but if I'm not participating in social media and I'm getting with the times, or I'm evolving, I can lose my business just off of the simple fact that I don't like social media.
Right.
And so all of those things play a part. I'm sure as a DJ, you have to consistently keep up with the right music. You have to. So it's about growth no matter what, in whatever way it is. So you have to consistently keep your ear to the streets. You have to consistently stay with the trends, because if not, you will not. People will not see your worth.
Right.
If they feel like, okay, if I go to this party and, like, I've done it. I'll be at a party and I hear DJ play music from, like, 2012. And I'm like, bro, what are you doing?
Right.
I'm not hiring you.
Exactly.
I'm not hiring
right.
you.
If, right.
And that's, but, and you may not even think about it. But for me, I look at that. I'm like, okay, what are you playing right now? Because if we're, the entertainment industry is for young people. So if you're playing something from 2012, most of the people that's in that party are probably
at least 30.
Well, they're between 21 and 30.
Right.
Majority of who's going out consistently.
Yeah.
If you're trying to gain an audience. So if you're a DJ and you're playing stuff that I ain't that I know,
right.
then no, I'm not hiring you. You need to get hired for a family reunion. That's the difference. So
yeah.
I think what helps is staying ahead of the curve.
Right.
Johnny, what's your take on that?
Well, I piggyback on a lot of what Bree just said, but I think ultimately it definitely starts with you. I think once you really get in tune with what it is that you do, you know, and again, it goes back to the lingo for me, you know, whatever form of, you know, creativity or artistry that you have, it's a part of your lingo. So just fully accepting that and not allowing somebody to tell you different, which and I'll comment on the DJ thing. You know, ain't nothing wrong every once in a while playing a song.
Gotta have it all.
Right. She's just saying not the whole, you know, event where it's like 2005.
Yeah, that's just a really bad DJ. you have to be versatile.
No.
You have to be versatile. I mean, I did like a Hispanic wedding once.
Ooh.
And like it was all bachata, salsa, like merengue, like, and I was like dying, but like it was what they paid me for, and so
right.
I just did it for the whole wedding, like
right.
you know, and I had to learn all of that, you know, and it hurt that I like grew up.
They
did, yeah, I did,
right.
like I did like two of their family's weddings.
Also
yeah
helps
yeah
because
yeah.
now you have some new knowledge of what's in now
yeah.
that
yeah
you know,
yep. your library is expanding,
yeah, expanding.
Right.
Right.
You have to constantly grow,
yeah,
right. So I agree.
Yeah, so I guess, guys, to close with one, I would say, very important question just for our IPR fam and listeners who's been rocking with us since November 2016.
Appreciate
yes, we love y'all. Any gems from either one of you guys to deliver, I'd say, to those who are struggling more so with fear, hesitation when it comes to, you know, not really being confident and putting themselves out there, or if not identifying with their self-worth, what would you say to those people?
I think first and foremost, acknowledging, at least for me, I'm Black, you know what I mean? And you know, growing up as a Black man, it's always been difficult, especially if certain situations and trauma that you've been through in your life affected what was, you know, left for you generationally. And so for me, there wasn't a lot of nothing, you know? And so like I had to start from scratch. And I think just understanding, coming from that and understanding where you come from and owning that plays a huge part in, you know, where you want to develop and where you want to go. So like for me, I've just always had to continue to persevere. And there's gonna be days where, you know, you feel like you're worthless, or you feel like you can't get this done or get that done. But it's still a choice at the end of the day. So I think just always trying to make the better choice where you can continue to grow and improve goes a long way. I mean, I was just telling Toisi that I just submitted like an executive summary to this potential investor, and it was like terrifying, you know? Like it took me a really long time to try to make it perfect, and I had a lot of help, you know, shout out to, you know, Skylar. But, you know, just trying to figure out, you know, how is this person going to look at this? You know, one, I am Black, you know, does he even believe in my vision? Or, you know, and understanding that nobody can really change how you, you know, dream, or, you know, because it's yours, you know what I mean? They can believe it or not, but long as you know that it's true and it can impact a lot of people. But you just got to jump off that cliff, man. You got to take those risks and keep it moving, you know, just keep swimming.
I have a quick question with that. How important is it to have a team with y'all?
I think it's really important. I mean, it really does take a village, like, because there's a lot of things, and it can be really overwhelming to try to, you know, do everything yourself. Try to make every deadline. So it's just people get in their minds of like, you know, it is your baby, it's yours, like, you know, you should hold it close to your heart, like, you know. But there's things that I don't excel in, you know, so like numbers and all of that, finances, that's not my thing. So I'm gonna revert, like, you know, to a friend that who's really good at that, and if he doesn't mind, or if he want to charge me some kind of stuff, I'll pay him, because I can't do that, you know what I mean? So I mean, I know how to count my money, but like, you know, I think it's important.
Continue.
Okay, so I'm gonna, because I didn't answer the first one, but I answered this first. Yeah. So having a team is great, mm-hmm. but I've had a team and I've like downsized as well. Mm-hmm. And downsizing is also great, mm-hmm. but having a team is important. You just have to have the right people. Mm-hmm. I think that it's a lot of people that they'll, like, I used to have like 10 people on staff, mm-hmm. and it killed me. Mm-hmm. It killed me. And it killed me because I knew how to do everything and they didn't know how to do anything. Mm-hmm. So I had to stop, show them certain stuff that was more catered to what I needed. And so after a while, it just became draining. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the day, money-wise, I wasn't able to even function, because mm-hmm. I had to pay out so much right. money. Mm-hmm. I was bringing in a lot of money, mm-hmm. but I was the last person that got paid. Mm-hmm. And people don't care if you, they the won't pay money, right. you know? So like for me, it was definitely, I had to make a decision to say, okay, do I want to keep this office? Why do I have this office? Right. How much is it costing me? What do I need? Okay, every week I need paper. Every week I need this. It became more of an issue and a problem, and my peace of mind was affected by it. So for me, having a team, I learned to have just the right amount of people, not to go crazy and have this amount. You know, so I've had the staff. I've had all of that.
Yeah.
But and it worked, but at the same token, there were times where I was waiting on them to do stuff, and I would be like, I can do this in 5 minutes.
Right, right, right.
And so you have to pick the right people.
Right.
And then I have people coming in, taking my contacts, doing all types of stuff. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these people are publicists now, mm-hmm. in Chicago.
Right, right.
You know, so I drew back because I was giving and giving and giving, and I've done so much giving that I damn near gave myself away,
right.
you know, and lost myself in it. So for me, having the right people, having a concise group of people that support,
right.
a concise group of people that actually serve a purpose, something that, like he said, he's not a numbers person. I needed to bring people that didn't want to do what I did,
mm-hmm.
but were able to come in and say, hey, I'm here to assist you. I'm here to help you do this particular category of something that you don't really care to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that. And then I would say the main, for me, wise words to walk away with is, you're not, like he said, you're not going to have always have the best day. The thing is to stay consistent and to also evolve consistently, keep learning. Do not stop learning. Do not think you know everything when you're walking into the, you know, if, when you get a certain level. And always, like, network. Never, I've always made it a point in my mind to make sure that I never treat people any type of way.
Right.
Because I never know, that intern or that person younger than me, I might end up meeting them at some point. So for me, it's always been to make sure you network, make sure you reach back, make sure you talk to people. It's a, like, you don't have to share your entire life with people, but I feel like what's helped me, you know, stay consistently in my business and in the industry is really just making sure that I don't burn bridges. And that's one of the biggest things when you are an entrepreneur, because we all need each other to function at some given, you know, space. So you start burning bridges, you don't have anybody to call, or they may not consider you, you know, for a job just because you acted a certain way, or you know, so it's just, you have to carry yourself a certain way, but also understand that, like, you gonna be broke for a while. And you're going to struggle. And if you're not ready to do that, then you're not made for this. And that's really what it's about. Like, and there are people that aren't made for it. And it you're going to struggle for a while. And so you gotta just set up in your mind that, okay, I'm not gonna stop doing what I do, because your passion is going to carry you. But that passion doesn't always pay off when it needs to, but when it starts, you'll know, you know. So that's the biggest part of what I'll say. Your passion will take you there. It's just up to you to persevere and really stick to it and not burn those bridges with those people, because you may need those people again.
Right. I think that was a great point you made.
Thank you.
Because I feel like I've always felt for a couple years, well, I was going to say now, but I always felt for a couple years in Chicago that people, depending on where you're at within the industry, that they look down on you. Like, I don't think as much as other cities. Like, if I go to New York, I'm going to New York for Afropunk. When I go to Afropunk, or when I go to New York, they show me love. When you come to Chicago, it's like a different,
it's a different vibe.
If you're not at Soho House, if you're not in that rank, people look down on you like you're not about to make it, or you're not about to, oh, you just do this.
Oh, no, they'll producer, you know, like, saying? Chicago low self-esteem here.
My question was going to be different. Like, how do y'all, like, I've always felt like that, but I didn't know if any of everybody else felt like that within different industries as well. Like, do y'all feel like, you know, when you go to somewhere else, like, how do you feel when you get more?
Yeah, what's the energy when you take, you know, like, we said on the show actually with IPR on the Heat, we said pretty much when it comes to taking Chicago with us instead of leaving, like, it's a lot of folks in Chicago, like you said, were common in that era, like in the early 2000s, a lot of artists was thriving, building their craft in Chicago, and then they hopped into another city, right? But taking Chicago with you in these different cities, like, when you're in Chicago, how do you guys, like you were saying, how's the energy, you know, within your industry? How do you feel when you guys are, you know what I mean? Like, what's the vibe to you guys?
Is it more, you know, networking? Is it more, you know, cause I feel a different, if I ever got Will and wants me to pop off and be the woman that he wants me to be, I would probably pop off in, like, New York than I would in Chicago, because I feel like I've made a family with, you know, Invisible Podcast and all the people that we've had on this, like, this, our platform, like, outside of this, I would not even got to the place I am right now. I would find more people in New York that would rob me well. So, you know, I would love to always support Chicago wherever I go, but if somebody asks me, like, oh, we was in Chicago, like, how many people? I'm like, only a small group of people did. But, and I hate to say that, but I didn't know if anybody else kind of felt like that within y'all industry as well. You made a point that triggered me, so I was just like, oh, this.
No, that's good. So it's interesting because I've personally always felt this way. So our whole motto at the Lingo Chicago is talk more, be social, right? So how can you get all of these different people from different ethnicities and different backgrounds in this same space, using any form of artistry, and getting them to have conversations with each other? You know, oh, I came to see, you know, Mark McFly. Oh, I came to see, you know what I mean, so and so, Fairplay, or whoever. Like, Now you have to have a conversation with the person that you didn't know about an artist that you didn't know, but you came to see this specific artist. Like, and so, but I've always experienced they don't rock with you until your name means something, you know? And so that's kind of what I'm going through right now. Even with like trying to pop up at different parts of the city, different neighborhoods, and trying to get more people to be able to come together and network. It's a real struggle. And again, if you're not confident in who you are and what you're doing, it's easy to just give up and be like, you know, right. What I'm doing this for, you know what I mean? But it's always surprising to me because I think Chicago is a really dope city. And I've lived here majority of my life, and I would always expect the support for an entrepreneur, especially for a black man, to be more than what it is. And I always find that it's really interesting that it's not. And when I go somewhere different, I feel so much love because people know that Chicago is a dope city. And so it's like, oh, you're from Chicago? And then it's like, yeah, you know. And so, but I think it's very interesting that it's not at a level that I think it really should be as far as the support that people are trying to build something great. Y'all talk so much about how bad our city is and what's going on with the gun violence and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But where's the support for the people who are trying to make the change for, you know, you to look at our city differently, you know? So I think it's very interesting, and it's really sad a lot of times that, you know, you think about, man, I'm about to go to New York, you know what I mean? I'm about to go to L.A. because I'll get more. And you have to do that. And I don't get mad at people who make those decisions because it's like, I still got to build my career. If y'all not going to support me here, then I'm going to go somewhere else, you know what I'm saying? So that's my take on it.
That's a good point. Very good point.
Well, I could say a lot. And even in his case, like, you got so many people that hire the same DJs because they're popular. And they don't, like, and they might not be as good as a person like him. So, in my case, here I've had to more so deal with the fact that all these mini-me's start popping up. Like I said, when I started, there was no publicist. Like, that was like, hey, I'm a publicist from Chicago. There's so many little younger versions of me now that now I got people that formed a whole little alliance that's like, oh, we don't. And I'm like, look, I work with everybody. What I've had to do is I started hitting every circle on my own. And I just start implanting myself in those circles. And the thing is people cannot be mad at you supporting them. And what I will tell you is, yes, it's uncomfortable sometimes because people are, most of the time, people in Chicago, there's this, oh, you're going to come and take my spot. There's not, hey, we can work together and make it happen. There's always this fear of, oh, you're going to take my spot. You're going to take my spot. Well, actually, no, we can just get money together and go about our business, and we can make it all look, we can make each other look good. And so everybody is not on that same wavelength. And I'm going to tell y'all where I come from because I'm the oldest person in the room. I already know that. I come from that group of industry people where they only, the gatekeepers, where they were like, oh, we're only going to let you get here. And we're going to control whatever else happens. And so there was always this whole circle and clique of people that they would never let the new people in ever. And so what happened was when the drill movement came and Chance and all of that, the younger group, they was like, well, we don't even know y'all. So we over here with our own thing. And it became an uncontrollable. See, everything was being controlled by a certain group of industry people at a certain point. And what happened was when this drill movement came out of nowhere, they didn't even know who all these different industry people was. The industry was late to drill. They caught up with drill. But by that time, these groups of people already had their own managers. Even if they was like super ignorant and a little more remedial versus being in the industry, they had the people in the circle that they trusted. So they had no choice but to open that circle up because they were the more popular group genre of music at that moment. And so I was the younger kid in the whole Kanye, Twister and that era. And then I'm the older person in the Chance, Chief Keef, Drill era. So I got to see everything. And really at the end of the day, like, what happened was that whole attitude of what I mean of that, who do you think you are, you gonna take my spot, that comes from the older That energy is still here.
That's deep.
And people, even if they don't say it, they exude it.
Oh yeah.
And it's very strong.
Yeah.
And it's not like a situation where it goes away. The first thing it is, well, who are you?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not cool with this person, then I'm not going to be cool
with
you. Or I'm skeptical of you. And so it comes out of that energy of, you're going to take my spot. Because there was a time where there were no spots.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's so open, but people up here in their minds still think that it's not.
Right.
When we are probably, other than LA, we have the most festivals. Out of every other major city, we have more festivals than New York. We have more festivals than Atlanta. It's opened up. And at this point, there is no way to control everything because there's so many angles that you can come from now, which I love that. And so for me, it's been trying to juggle that whole, see, what I did was I didn't have a spot. I created my own. And that now that I had, now when I created it, now people want to take what I've created and bootleg it, or just be like, okay, I'm about to be the one that, like, and at this point I've had to say, you know what, well, you can have it because you don't even know what come with dealing with these dang on artists, and they don't want to pay and these different things. And so for me, going to another city has always been like, it's always love, no matter where you go. Now, what I will tell y'all is, when you leave Chicago, everybody from Chicago, if they meet up in another city, they unify.
Right.
That is the oxymoron of the whole thing. Is that you'll be somewhere and you'll be like, oh, you're from Chicago?
And here come the little circle.
And then you come back home and it's a whole different energy. And so you learn what I've had to do. Now, on the flip side, if I go to New York or LA because of what I do, they're not gonna let me in because I'm a publicist and it's competitive. In New York, and it's very competitive. PR is competitive in general. But PR in New York and LA is super competitive. They're not gonna let me in. And I had to figure that out first. And I was like, well, I got the market on lock. What am I gonna do?
You want?
I think it's really great. And I'll just say this one last thing. But NERD came out with an album. There's a line in one of the songs that basically goes, nigga, hold a door. What you trying to close it for? There's room for so many more. And that whole album, like, changed my life. And, like, it's so simple, but it's so, like, impactful in every part of life. Because it's just, like, if I DJ and I know there's, like, young guys in the neighborhood who enjoy me DJing and they want to learn how to DJ, I'm going to teach them how to DJ. I'm going to start getting gigs. And if I can't do that gig, I'm going to refer it to them. Like, because that's the way it should be. Like, why am I closing the door? Oh, no, I only DJ on this side of town. Like, you can't get none of this. No, it's
the Jay-Z method, and that's where we mess up at. This is why I love Jay-Z, and he's probably my favorite rapper, entrepreneur, whatever. Jay-Z got smart and was like, hey, if I want to stay relevant, I need to cuff these young people that are already doing it. And I need their audience. And they can have some of my audience. Because that's how you stay relevant. Here, we will literally outdate ourselves and run ourselves dry.
Right.
You know, until we like people, like until you're not getting booked or you're not doing anything. Jay-Z is one of the smartest people. He it's not like he's opening the door for the floodgates. He's picking and choosing who he feels like. Because guess what? At one point, he might need them just as much. Because guess what? He's getting older.
Bars ain't the same.
You see what I mean?
But you're right, though.
It's a thing. So what he's done is he's consistently been able to reinvent himself because of that.
Yeah.
And he's been able to stay relevant because of that.
Yeah.
When you close the door, you actually hurt yourself.
So, right. I think that was a beautiful point that both of y'all made. And I'm glad y'all talked about it because that's been on my mind, you know, just thinking about, like, you know, where I'm at and, you know, working with, being a producer for IPR and things like that. And it does get, you know, you do get down sometimes when you don't feel that same energy and that same support and love. Even when we're working twice as hard and we see other podcasts that, no shade, but it's like, it's not there. It's not it. It goes back to what you said about the self-worth and knowing we know who we are. We know the impact we've made so far and what we're going to continue to do. So I appreciate both of y'all saying that point.
When it just comes to the impact that I know, as the, you know, the founder and creator of IPR and seeing, like you said, you know, just to piggyback the impact in which how we have not only made a staple in Chicago, there are so many people to tell me, guys, like, you know, I got a couple of friends that were already featured on the show. Like, you know, how can I get on? But knowing that we have that rep of that positivity in Chicago, you know, in which we are the arms that cuff the folks, right? Or bring that snowball effect where, okay, you not only have you been on our show, but we're opening the door for you to connect with the folks that have already been with us in which you can collaborate with, you know? So creating that bridge and that gate for people to not only flourish, but then also give themselves, you know, a space to showcase themselves. So, but definitely I would say first and foremost, we appreciate you guys for giving your knowledge and story, you know, that has impacted us, you know, if not in this space now. So just to close, I would say, what are some things you guys got going on in the month of September specific, some things that you want to just give the listeners a taste of what you got?
I am putting together a tour called Swank PR Media Day, and it's a signature event that I've done in Chicago for the last probably 6-7 years, and now I'm taking it on the road, speaking of, you know, bringing the experience to a different place. So in the month of September, we'll be doing Swank PR Media Days in Texas and New York, Virginia, Toronto, and wherever else they'll have us. And other than that, just working and doing interviews. People have been asking me to do panels and interviews, so I'm doing it.
Hey, keep doing your website. And
Social media is, my company is at Swank PR, SWANK PR. And then my personal is at Brianna 31, which my name is BRIAHNA. My company is pretty much Swank PR across the board. You can go Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Company is swankpublishing.com, and you can pretty much Google me and find me.
Y'all Google it, y'all.
How about you, Dan?
True. So the Lingo Chicago has a couple things coming up. We are doing a Afro Beats mixer August 25th in North Lawndale at the MLK space. You can find more information about it on the lingochicago.com. September, the date isn't finalized yet, but look out for it. We're doing a showcase called Sippin' Sound. So just for the next year, man, we're just doing a lot of pop-ups. Working on some cool production things. If you are a YouTuber, look up the Story of Roxanne, cool animation that we did. It was pretty fun. So my Instagram is TheLingoChicago. Website, www.lingochicago.com.
Amazing.
Cool. Mic drops.
Right. That was good. Drops.
Yo, this is only episode 2.
Right.
So shout out to that. If anything, I know for certain, just from what I've seen with IPR, like the level of quality has definitely shifted in a stronger gear. And I know for certain within my heart that we're only going to go higher. Mm-hmm. We're just thriving, you know, and good energy and good manifestation and timing and order is falling in place. So with all that has been said, y'all take ownership to not only what you do, but yourself, your identity. Be proud of what you do. Stay confident. Stay consistent. Number gems.
Right.
Today.
Yeah,
so, y'all.
We appreciate you guys fighting through.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, no problem. And also, we have to shout out SAIC again because they holding the sound with all these shows we've been recording and things like that. Ooh. And also, let's shout out the squad, Simba, Tamero, the whole squad, IPR squad.
Yeah.
You know, the spirit is around us. So.
Yes. Everybody else is in spirit. Y'all can follow us at Invisible Podcast Radio on Instagram. Y'all check out our website, invisiblepodcastradio.com. You can check out all recent footage, past events we've done, recap videos,
previous shows of season one, all that good stuff. So yeah, y'all, stay tuned for episode 3. And yeah, it's a wrap. Right, it's a RZA rap.
Next episode.
Bye bye.
Peace and love, y'all.